This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, a look at the American Jewish Archives. It's the world's largest freestanding research center dedicated solely to the study of the American Jewish experience. First up, it's tough to be the parent of a child who's struggling in school. Even parents of gifted children face challenges and frustrations. And while most schools are able to recognize students who need extra help and provide them with additional tutoring and guidance, many schools are not equipped to meet the needs of truly gifted students. Joining us to look at what it's like to be the parent of a gifted child are Parent Division Chair of the Ohio Association for Gifted Children and owner of EB Marketing Communications, Angela Grimm. Gifted specialist with the Hamilton County Education Service Center, an accelerated math and reading teacher at St. John the Baptist School on Dry Ridge Road and Flick, and Eric Hassel, who's a parent at St. John the Baptist School. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ann, Angela, and Eric, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
So how do you define giftedness? Ann, do you want to take that one?
Well, since education is the bailiwick of the states, each state can define it differently. In Ohio, we have four categories of giftedness. Superior cognitive are students who meet an IQ threshold, or we can also get that from an achievement test score of 95th percentile or above on across multiple subject areas. Specific academic means we can identify students in reading and writing, science, social studies, and math. So that's a 95th percentile or above in any of those individual subject areas. Creativity is another area that is recognized in Ohio that requires basically two different aspects to look at, a lower IQ threshold and then some other measure of creativity to go with it. And then visual and performing arts can include drama, dance, music, and the visual arts. And that requires identification by an expert in the field, but they're also looking for basically the same threshold, students who are performing in the top 5%.
So those are the Ohio standards. Is it pretty much the same though in other states?
So different states can have different areas. The federal definition actually includes another facet of leadership that many states have adopted, but Ohio hasn't. So different states can set different score thresholds too. Ohio, for an IQ, on an individual IQ test that most people are familiar with, you'd be looking for a score of about 130. Some states might set that a little bit higher. Some states might set it a little bit lower.
So do we have any idea, Ann, how many gifted kids there are in Ohio in this area?
In Ohio, public schools are mandated to identify students. So the identification numbers run about 16% across the whole state. But one understanding we have to have with that is that there are a couple of testing requirements that have to happen at certain grades, at certain years, in certain areas. But some of those less common areas, visual and performing arts and creativity, often never get assessed unless a parent specifically asks for it. And sometimes parents don't even ask for that assessment because the school doesn't have services to provide anyway. So while we have 16% of public school students identified in Ohio, those are going to be mostly in the intellectual areas. So that's a gross underestimate of the total number of students who are gifted.
Angela, it sounds like it's not necessarily all based on IQ, is it?
Absolutely not. No. I think for a lot of students, as Ann mentioned, it really is about their ability to be creative and critical thinkers. So it goes into the visual and performing arts. There's a lot that encompasses it. But not only that, but there's a lot that encompasses the world of gifted beyond just their academic abilities. And I think that's the biggest part for parents that sometimes makes the journey a little more of a struggle, because there are sometimes some social emotional quirks or concerns, if you will, that go with having a gifted child.
Okay, so those are some of the challenges then that they face.
Absolutely.
Now, all three of you are parents of gifted children, and Eric, let's start with you. How did you find out that you had you've got three gifted kids, right?
Well, one yet to be determined.
One yet to be determined.
My kids are 11, 9, and 5.
Okay.
But with our oldest, who's 11 and in fifth grade, it really came from her input. She was asking questions about how she could expand her base of knowledge and how she could work ahead with some of the subject matters at school. So that's one of the important factors that my wife and I have noticed, is that it's been really important for us to have that direct dialogue with our daughter so that we can make sure that she is part of the decision-making process and that we are looking out for her because of what she needs directly from her.
And I think that's the reality, is involving them in the discussion. But I think sometimes, too, you don't know what you don't know as a parent of a gifted child. You don't know what the journey brings. And sometimes a gifted child may not look like a quote-unquote typical smart or bright child because of some of the other things that overcasts that intellectual ability. You sometimes have kids who, you know, school districts or professionals will say that they have a misdiagnosis, that they have ADD or ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder, other concerns that really aren't mental health concerns, but are rather a manifestation of their giftedness.
Now, how early can a parent see the signs that their child might be gifted?
Well, we were kind of in the same boat. It started pretty early on. We knew when we had a daughter reading chapter books at age 5 next to kids who were learning their ABCs that we needed to look at different options. And we actually had a principal come to us and say, you know, have you considered whole grade acceleration? Have you considered having your child skip grade? And to be honest, as a parent, I said, oh, my gosh, I wouldn't want to push my kid. That's crazy. But we worked through a process as a team with all the professionals in the school and with our daughter, first and foremost. And she said, oh, good, I won't be bored anymore. And we knew. Yeah, we knew. And, you know, she was a kid who, you know, was learning division, you know, again, when she was that age. And so it doesn't always pop up that way. But oftentimes parents will see the signs that a typical education setting just isn't the best fit.
And I think it's interesting that acceleration is kind of a hard concept for people to wrap their brains around, because it seems like everybody has a story of their second cousin twice removed who 29 years ago was grade skipped and was miserable. And what Angela refers to in terms of the process is that we have an instrument now that's based on 50 years of research that we use to assess students who might be candidates for acceleration. And that is going to short circuit all of those second cousins who had those miserable experiences. We can go through the process and determine if a student is a strong candidate for acceleration. And what we find is in the research literature in education, the comment is there is no intervention in the whole field of education that is so well researched and so well supported and unequivocally beneficial to children that is so dismissed by even educators themselves, because it's a foreign concept to them that they get no training on. They don't realize that we have a full research base. And in fact, it's such a good practice that the state of Ohio, within the last several years, has implemented a law that now public school districts must have an acceleration policy that accounts for not only whole grade acceleration, but even single subject acceleration. That may be an excellent fit for a lot more students and a really cost-effective measure that schools can take to meet students' needs. So if a student is reading really, really young, but maybe isn't across the board off the charts, that student can move to another grade level just for reading class and have her needs met. And it doesn't cost the school anything more, but it can lead to great achievement gains. And Ohio also requires that public school districts consider early entrance to kindergarten. So a 4-year-old who might really be ready. So those parents who are seeing that really young can investigate that option. And then also those students who can get through high school faster and graduate early. That's the fourth option that Ohio requires we look at.
So just to be sure, acceleration is grouping them by their learning ability versus grouping them by their chronological age. Is that correct?
And not necessarily grouping. It's probably an individual decision, but you're right. It is kind of getting away from that mandate that all children must be exactly the same because and have the same academic needs because they're the same age.
And it's worked out for us as a family. It has been truly the best decision that we ever made. It was a very hard decision, you know, because, again, I didn't know what I didn't know, and I was concerned. And until I dug into the research that Anne's talking about, it's called A Nation Deceived or Nation Empowered is the new version. And I encourage families who are exploring that idea of acceleration to jump into that research. But we as a family, it has turned out to be the best fit for our daughter.
And Angela, how concerned were you with your daughter in the social aspect of going and being in class with kids a year older?
Read my mind. Perfect question.
Well, and I was originally very concerned. I will tell you, she's 11 and she's in the 7th grade. And we just sat down for her parent-teacher conferences, and the teacher said, she's very mature. We would never have guessed that she had accelerated. And it has been a fabulous fit, because oftentimes I think you'll see that socially students want to be with other peers who can give them that intellectual pull and that intellectual challenge. So for her, she's never missed a beat. It's been really great.
Have you found that through sports or extracurricular activities, she was still able to maintain that time with her friends?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was her Girl Scout leader. We kept her with her peers there. And she has a lot of other opportunities through dance, taekwondo, things that, yeah, she could stay with her same age peers. It's been great.
But that's another point, is that other programs may not consider this possibility and may actually punish children for pursuing their needs academically. In the Catholic school system, we have CYO, and I've worked with parents in other schools besides ours who their students are in sports. If the student does a grade skip, then the student is forced into the higher grade level for athletics, even though that may be nowhere near her strength. I had one student who grade skipped actually from after finishing sixth grade and skipped seventh and eighth and went to ninth, but she dearly loved her volleyball team back at her elementary school, and she should have had still two more years of eligibility there. And she was by no means a powerhouse. She was on the B teams, and she was relegated to statistician because she couldn't step foot on the court because she was technically a ninth grader, even though she was much younger than the seventh grader who had been retained.
Right. Mentally, she was ahead
and
of her physical.
Was much older,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And what are some of the challenges? And of course, Angela and Eric, as parents of kids who are gifted, you can chime in on this too. Boredom is something that you brought up, Angela. What are some of the other challenges that gifted students face in school?
I think some of the students can kind of feel a little bit of isolation if you don't realize why you're not like everybody else. So you can kind of feel like an oddball if nobody ever has the information to share with you that this is the way your brain works differently. You can imagine one of the common characteristics of gifted kids is a passion for social justice and really just getting really upset about major world issues. So there aren't a lot of 8-year-olds who have a lot of people to talk to on the playground about how awful it is that the bombings that are going on in Syria and all the families that are refugees, and just that's just not a common conversation for 8-year-olds to have. So that isolation may be something that parents see their children struggling with and have to look for other places to find that peer group besides just the typical classroom.
Angela, what's been your experience?
You know what? It's been everything. My son is also identified, and they are very different children. I think it's knowing that one size does not fit all. And I think for a lot of gifted kids, you know, they want to be people pleasers, so they want to fit in that mold. And so for them to break out of that sometimes can be uncomfortable. And I think that's where parents have to help with the advocacy piece. Parents have to find their voice. And sometimes that's very uncomfortable as a parent. You know, I said I didn't want to be that parent. I didn't want to be the pushy parent. But the reality is gifted kids push us to advocate for them. They are the ones who are helping us lead that discussion and dialogue at the classroom level all the way up to the state level.
Eric, what kind of challenges have you seen with your kids?
You know, one of the aspects has been the drive for perfectionism and placing too much of an emphasis on getting everything right with everything that they do.
Also, it's tough for them to be kids then.
Yes, just to back down and calm down a bit. I have a lot of nerve in saying that myself because I get accused still to this day.
Did the apple not fall far?
It did not go far at all. And actually that's a good point, is that as a parent, I really have to put myself in the back seat sometimes and remember that they don't have to be perfect with their schoolwork and with every assignment, every test, every exam, even though I want to be that way myself professionally and back when I was in school. But making sure that they understand the expectations and knowing that they can manage to their own expectations as well.
And I think Eric's right. That perfectionism is huge. And I think you see that prevalent in so many gifted kids and adults. But they put enough internal pressure on themselves that they don't need any of the external pressure. You know, I think without a doubt, you know, they want every I dotted and every T crossed. And when they are, again, don't please others or don't please themselves and hit that benchmark, it can be a little intense in your house sometimes.
Yes.
We will continue our conversation about gifted children, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to look at what it's like to be the parent of a gifted child, our parent division chair of the Ohio Association for Gifted Children and owner of EB Marketing Communications, Angela Graham, gifted specialist with the Hamilton County Educational Service Center and accelerated math and reading teacher at St. John the Baptist School and FLIC, and Eric Castle, a parent at St. John the Baptist School. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And how many different variations are there on giftedness? I mean, what are all the different types that you see?
Well, besides the four categories that Ohio identifies, it can get really tricky when we go to identify students we call twice exceptional. So Angela referred to this earlier, the student who has ADHD in addition to giftedness, although it is common that giftedness gets confused for ADHD a lot of times. But some of these students can also, going along with that perfectionism, can come some anxiety. Or even a gifted student who's blind or a gifted student who's deaf. That's one exceptionality in addition to the exceptionality for giftedness. And what the research shows is that these students tend to fall into one camp or the other. They get seen as having a disability, and that's all that's seen, and that's all that's addressed in school. Or they can get seen as gifted because they're so good or they can get seen as average because they're so good at compensating for their disability, but they can only bring it up to the average level. So often they get overlooked for gifted services when they really need a two-pronged approach.
And don't you think those families, I think, sometimes are the ones who are having to advocate the strongest or having to, push the strongest? Because, again, that doesn't always manifest itself, as you said, as a gifted child. And there's often a lot of misunderstanding in terms of their 504 or their IEP and how service is being delivered. So I think sometimes those parents have a pretty intense fight.
Now, what's IEP stand for? What's 504 stand for?
Individual education plan. So if a student had a disability, they, by federal mandate, would have an individual education plan, or they would have a 504 for a particular medical condition. But there is no similar mandate for those gifted services and supports. As Ann mentioned earlier, there is no mandate to serve at all. In fact, services in Ohio over the last 20 years have fallen dramatically. We've gone from having almost 40% of students across the state served to now only having about 20% of students served across the state. So that continues to be a pretty big concern across Ohio.
What's causing that decline?
Well, I think part of it is, I think we are in somewhat of a philosophical debate still as a nation. We very much want our country to be a country of excellence, but we also want equity in education. And again, education is not a one-size-fits-all approach. And so I think some of that philosophical divide, along with finite resources, there is very little federal money allocated towards gifted education, and the state allocates very little. And the money that they do allocate, unfortunately, districts don't always spend that money as they should for the best interest of students.
And this brings up an opportunity for parents right now. What is right this very moment under review in the state of Ohio are the rules governing gifted education. So schools that take gifted funding right now have to follow certain procedures. They have to have a certified gifted teacher delivering services. They have to have somebody with gifted licensure as gifted coordinator. They have to have a certain number of contact minutes a week to call it gifted service. All that is really been thrown into the hopper and could actually be thrown out the window because the rules that we previously had, which were very beneficial to students that encompass 14 pages, have now been chopped down to 2. But that's still at the proposal stage. So the Ohio Department of Education, just in the last couple of days, opened a survey for parents and other stakeholders to give their feedback and what of those original service requirements they want kept in the regulations, so that a school district can't take thousands and thousands of dollars and just send kids on a field trip and say, we've done gifted services, we're going to spend the rest of this money on an administrative retreat or something.
And it
like
seems
that.
Like Ann's being somewhat tongue-in-cheek with that, but that's the reality. There have been districts that have bought computers and filing cabinets and other things that have really nothing to do with gifted services. And so without those qualified inputs governing or overseeing what gifted education looks like in Ohio, I'm fearful that that more of that will continue. And I would encourage folks to look at Ohio Association for Gifted Children's website and sign up for the advocacy alerts, because you can plug in and learn more about what Ann's talking about in terms of those gifted standards.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Amy in Blue Ash. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Hello, Amy. You're on.
Hey, my son, this has been quite a few years back, but he was gifted and was doing quite well in one of the very great school districts here in Cincinnati. And but he was getting a little bored with what the offerings were, because it's actually a really small school. So we signed up when he was a freshman. We got that paper on the first day of school that said, you know, if you're interested in doing the post-secondary option program, sign now, and it's 2 years down the road. Well, what that program was my son ended up going to UC at the Raymond Walters branch full-time his junior and senior year. He actually got credit for high school and for college at the same time. And so when he graduated, he actually got his associate's degree before he got his high school degree. But it was a fascinating program, and I know it's still going very strong over there. And there were just tons of kids that were coming from school districts that didn't have advanced placement options.
Well, Ann actually wants to talk about this, Amy. She knows exactly where you're going. Yeah.
Awesome.
The PSEO program changed just this year to a new name, College Credit Plus. And Amy, you'll be happy to hear that it has expanded dramatically. It's now available to students all the way down to seventh grade, because in our field, we do see profoundly gifted children who at age 12 can handle college classwork. So the beauty of this program is that all students in Ohio, public school, private school, or homeschooled, can take college classes also for high school credit and get it paid for through the state. So now a student could even get a bachelor's degree at the same time he graduates from high school.
Joining us this afternoon, Parent Division Chair of the Ohio Association for Gifted Children, Angela Grimm, gifted specialist with the Hamilton County Educational Service Center and accelerated math and reading teacher at St. John the Baptist School, Ann Flick, and Eric Hassel, a parent at St. John the Baptist School. Thanks to Diana Newman for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. Next, let's go to Antoinette in Liberty Township. Hi, Antoinette.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Well, I was calling. I actually know Angie. But my son, who's now 12 in seventh grade, has an IQ of 141. But when he was in kindergarten and first grade and second grade, he had an incredibly hard time learning to read. In fact, every day when he would come home from school, we would do his reading, and they would have tears and meltdowns, and he almost actually ended up in a remedial reading program. Well, after, you know, I knew he was so very smart, and I had to push the school district to have him tested, because I knew that there was just something that wasn't adding up. And I heard back all the time, well, he's doing fine because he was passing. They finally tested him, and it turns out actually he has Asperger's syndrome, which I think that they call it high-functioning autism now. But anyway, since he's gotten the help that he needed, he's actually in all accelerated classes now. So he's in advanced language arts, doing really well. And, you know, if I had taken no for an answer, I don't know where he would have been.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear things are going better for him. That's excellent.
And I think that's what it's about, is not taking no for an answer. Again, I think sometimes advocacy as a parent can be a very uncomfortable journey, because you worry about you getting a bullseye or your child getting a bullseye, or, you know, rubbing people the wrong way. And you don't want to be that parent. But I think in Antoinette's case, you know, if she hadn't been, you know, as forward as she was with her thinking and her advocacy for her son, he wouldn't be on that journey. And that's what happens a lot of times to gifted kids, is they end up underachieving and dropping out. I actually had a sister who ended up completely dropping out of college, and she had a National Merit Scholar, a full ride to college. But when she got to school, she was a perfectionist and she couldn't handle it. And when she hit that first moment of failure, she didn't make it. And so I think there are enough of those stories where people have to understand that these kids do have needs.
And Antoinette's story seems to be a really common theme. If my wife Beth had taken no for an answer, I wouldn't be sitting here. So it's about that determination to look out for the best interests of your child and to pull forward. And one of the things that worked well for us is developing a strategy, because there were two of us. We could divide and conquer, so to speak, with how we would approach the school administration and the relationships we could develop with the other parents and the conversations we could have to produce that groundswell of support for getting a program implemented and expanded, I should say, at St. John the Baptist. So that advocacy is key.
What Eric says there is key, is building the groundswell of support. So it's not that people are opposed to serving these students. They just don't necessarily know what can be done for them. So being the parent who partners with the school to come up with a solution to meet individual student needs, and you might find that those are other students with similar needs, really to build that partnership that will endure for not only that child, but other children to come.
For sure. And that's what the parent division for OAGC is trying to do. And we did that locally with our own district, Lakota. We have a great partnership with the district, and we are working as parents to help fill in some of those gaps, provide, you know, writing competitions and book clubs and other things that students might not be getting without the support of parents. It absolutely has to be a partnership.
Let's talk with Marilyn in Westside. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I just had a couple comments and maybe a question out of those. For those individuals who are really good in school, it seems a lot of times they're paired with the student that's a troublemaker, or they're sitting by the kid that needs extra help or that maybe has some kind of disorder and such. And I talked to a lot of different friends, and they have children that are very smart and well-behaved and stuff. They always seem to be paired with this individual. And I'm just wondering if there's any studies that have ever been done about that. I mean, do these kids grow up to be, you know, future doctors or teachers, and what the comment would be about that? And then also, for these kids that are gifted, is there any advocacy that's going up to them with this perfectionism? Is there, like, groups where the kids can talk about this when they're in grade school or high school?
Okay. Thanks, Marilyn.
Well, I can answer the last part of that. At least in my own district, they have allocated resources at all grade levels, but especially at the 7th through 12th grade level. They have gifted support advisors who are helping with the social-emotional components, because sometimes, again, the perfectionism, the anxiety, all the things that we've talked about as a group can stand in the way of them becoming accomplished and achieving. Going back to the first part of your question about the tutoring, you know, I don't think that's an uncommon experience for gifted children. Unfortunately, that's not what is ideal for those children. They should not have to spend their educational career tutoring others. They deserve to have the opportunity to reach their full potential, and doing one-on-one tutoring with others isn't necessarily the way to achieve that.
And while there is a whole body of research that supports that, I think the key is that educators often go through their entire undergraduate program with no mention of gifted. So a lot of things in gifted education are counterintuitive to what we're taught to do for the bulk of the population in our classrooms. So what we've found at St. John's is that teachers are very open, and they recognize that these students are able, and they want to do everything they can for them. It's just a case of sharing some information with them about how to do that, and that we can share the research that shows that when these kids are grouped together, not only their gains are higher, but other groups' gains are higher.
Well, and I think that goes to the whole piece about professional development. And again, with the state standards where they are now, the state will no longer necessarily require that input or that level of professional development. And I think you're right. There's no teacher that wants to do harm. They just don't have the information and knowledge to know what is best for those gifted children.
Lisa in College Hill, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a child in Cincinnati Public Schools at the high school level, was assessed with an IQ in the 150s, has executive functioning issues, and that's putting it lightly. He can't organize his way out of a wet paper bag with one end open. he can handle any academic challenge that you throw at him, but he generally cannot finish his homework because he can't plan. He can't handle an academic course load in terms of planning. So in his profile, when he was evaluated, it was called out, you know, that this was an issue, and it was probably the most pivotal point in his education that was causing problems for him. The school has literally 20 minutes a week allotted towards helping him organize himself in his IEP. And so because of the fact that they have no staff to meet with him, it was suggested someone meet with him twice a day for 15 minutes to help him stay organized. They have no one to do that, and no funding to hire someone in to do it. I yesterday had a meeting with them, and I am going to be his liaison for that. So I will be going up to the school twice a day to meet with him, organize him, carry all of that information home, and hopefully in the process teach him how to handle the academic workload. And I know it's been 9 years that we've had a child with these issues, and it's gut-wrenching to watch them. And I want the people on your show to sort of what I'd like to hear from them is, where can parents with issues like this go, and how far can they take it? I mean, I've taken it all as far as I can.
You're looking for ideas on resources and avenues then. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you, Lisa.
So what I think you're focused on is the support for the special education side, and I think that's a key factor that we in education have to consider with students who are twice exceptional, but also all gifted students. What can happen is they are so able that they could have issues that never rise up in elementary school. We never see them, maybe even in middle school. So what happens is you have a student who in high school who is having his mom go to school to help him get organized every day, and where is that going to leave that student when he goes into college? So that's why it's really important that we have the challenge level early on in elementary school, so students get those time management skills, so they learn to check their assignments.
We're running short on time, so what would be your suggestion?
Absolutely, I agree with Anne, and I think, you know, again, that challenge, they've got to get that challenge. My daughter just said yesterday she still hasn't studied. She's in seventh grade, and she still hasn't learned those study skills.
So it's the focus on behaviors early. It's something I'm struggling with now, are the behaviors that I wish I had really mastered when I was younger, but so now it's incumbent upon me to focus on helping my children so that they don't follow that same path and have to look back at that.
Well, Anne, Angela, and Eric, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Parent Division Chair of the Ohio Association for Gifted Children, Angela Grimm, Gifted Specialist with the Hamilton County Educational Service Center and Accelerated Math and Reading Teacher at St. John the Baptist School on Dry Ridge Road, Ann Flick, and Eric Hassel, a parent at St. John the Baptist School. Coming up, we'll explore the American Jewish Archives. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.